This is Mental, the podcast that destigmatizes mental health. I'm Bobby Timms.
I'm Annie Harris.
Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go. This week, we're talking all about family support as a factor in mental health. To start off, we've got some stats all about what it's like for people who are carers for family members in the UK. So from Carers UK, they found 1 in 8 adults are carers in the UK, which equates to 6.5 million people. And of those, over 1.3 million people provide care over 50 hours per week. Any initial thoughts on those?
It's really interesting to hear that statistic, actually, because my mum is an unofficial carer. Mm-hmm. By unofficial carer, I mean she doesn't receive any state benefit for that. She actually works full time and works as a carer effectively for my grandma full time as well. And the fact that she works full time means that she doesn't qualify for a low enough income to receive a carer's benefit. So the best thing actually financially for her to do is to work full time, mm-hmm. which is insane. When I see how difficult that is for my mum, and then you say numbers like that, I just imagine that there are thousands of more people in the UK living as carers in really, really difficult positions. And I think it's important as well to consider that my mum is caring for her mum. So it's not even as if she's caring for somebody she doesn't know or love or, like, you know, have any sort of emotional attachment to, but she also has to go through this really emotionally draining thing of caring for somebody who's cared for her whole life. And she's now becoming the carer. So I really admire what carers do on a day-to-day basis. It's something that's really personal to me. And I'm sure I'll talk a hind legs off this donkey. So,
right, I agree. And I'm so glad to be covering this episode, because so often there are people that have the pressure of caring for a loved one. They're also trying to work. They're also doing all the household chores or whatever they need to do to keep their normal life together as well.
Absolutely. Mum often says that she feels like she can't take any time off, or like she can't look after her own mental health because she has a responsibility to somebody else. And we're always really sort of gently encouraging her to take some time for herself. She actually went to Bath for the weekend, but that was really like the first time that she'd done that in years, I think, like at least 2 or 3 years. You know, it had been since she'd gone away for like a spa weekend with her girlfriends, which was really sad. Me and my brother are grown up and we don't require her care anymore, so this should be the best time of her life, you know, one of the best times of her life, of just being able to be free and do whatever she wants. But instead, she's, I suppose she wouldn't use the word shackled, but she has this really big responsibility that's not only financially draining but so emotionally draining as well.
Right. And that's why in particular, I'm so glad to cover a topic like this, because often it's underrepresented, because when people are trying to do all this and look after a family member and keep their own life together, try and etch out some free time if they possibly can, then they can be kind of underrepresented because they probably don't have time to also speak out about what it's like being a carer.
So I'm really glad that we're covering it.
Yeah, I feel like it is an underrepresented voice, and that's why I really thought these statistics were powerful, the initial one being 1 in 8 adults are carers in the UK. That's more than I thought it was. And maybe that's partly because I don't assume all the different types of care scenarios. There's obviously ones like looking after an elderly parent, which we're sort of accustomed to as a society, but then looking after like a disabled relative or a relative with a long-term, very severe mental illness, where we may not see that because they're just trying to deal with that in the home.
I think also when you said about it's 1 out of every 8 adults is a carer, my mind instantly goes to people like my mum, sort of like women in their, you know, women or men in their mid-late 50s caring for an elderly parent. But that statistic is just adults. I mean, 18-year-olds are adults. Like you say, it could be a disabled sibling or somebody with a long-term mental health condition or a partner or a husband or a wife or a child.
For sure. And I've got another stat really relevant to that in a moment. I just wanted to also finish up saying with the second one there, I mentioned that 1.3 million people provide over 50 hours of care per week within that 1 in 8 adults. That's really significant as well. So that's maybe off the top of my head, like a fifth or sixth of the total carers spending 50 hours or more doing the caring. And that is more than most people will do in a full-time job.
In an office, yeah, absolutely. I know that you have to earn under an amount of money to get carers allowance from the government, but I don't know then what the wage is from the government to be a carer full time.
So for that, again, according to Carers UK, the carers allowance is a main carer's benefit and is £64.60 for a minimum of 34 hours, and that's equivalent to £185 per hour.
I was going to say, like, that's insane.
Right, so that's lower than even the apprentice wage, and that's also described by Carers UK as the lowest benefit of this kind.
God, that's disgusting. Ugh, that's horrifying. Ugh.
So it makes sense that not only is this tough enough financially, but also it makes sense that so many people are trying to maintain as many hours work as well. To support them and the person they're caring for. But then when
you... And also care is expensive. Like, there's equipment and clothing and, like, specialist stuff and maintaining a normal life like any other human being. Like, if anything, it should be more. Like, that's why we have things like personal independence payments for disabilities, because they're acknowledging the fact that living with a disability or living in an extreme circumstance is more expensive than if you're perfectly healthy.
Right, for sure. And actually, on that, the subject of how expensive it is, there's actually an economic benefit to our society in general. So carers save the economy £132 billion per year, which is an average of £19,336 per carer.
Bloody legends.
So not only are they doing so much for their loved one to look after them, but also that's comparing what they would cost with our current care services out there. So they are saving £19,336 that would otherwise have to come from the government or from charity, or even the person that needs caring for may even have to fork out for that out of their insurance or their own money.
Yeah. And yet we're spending like £4.2 billion on Brexit, I think I remember reading the other day.
I don't even have the energy to go down that rabbit hole right now.
I can't. I just can't.
I'm just in a full state of grief about Brexit. And so then to tie back, for the episode we're talking all about family support as a factor in mental health. And so I've got a few things in terms of the additional support carers may need and how it can affect their mental health as well. Carers UK did a survey recently which found that 72% of carers said they had suffered mental ill health as a result of caring. And 61% said they had suffered physical ill health as a result of caring. So that's an interesting one where they're actually quite similar, the mental 72% and the physical 61%, in terms of the very real strain that this can have on the health of the person doing the caring. And that makes sense when we talk about what we have done. They also found that the demands of caring meant that 1 in 5 carers end up giving up work altogether at some
Yikes.
Point. And that's not that they necessarily give up working forever, but at some point the responsibilities become so intense that they can't keep up with everything else. And so their work has to go for the sake of looking after that family member who may be, in some cases, entirely reliant on them to do basic day-to-day living.
Absolutely. Well, I'm really glad that we've got this episode coming up. I've got a feeling that it's going to be a really, really good one.
Absolutely. And I'm really glad in the episode we talked so broadly about the different kind of carers and also how much of a positive impact caring can have on the person dealing with the mental illness themselves as well. The one being cared for. One more stat in terms of how broad this issue is from the Mental Health Foundation, which found that 38% of young carers report having a mental health problem themselves. So although that is lower than the adult carers, that gives you an indication how the strain of caring for an adult family member as a young person can start very early on.
Yeah, oh, that's really awful to hear. Bless them. Goodness me. I think I don't have anything to add to that without saying something that's already been said. Like,
Well, the good news is the guest we have today, Shanley Lewis, not only is she a repeat guest, so she's already a delight. She's already tried and tested on the podcast.
Already a delight.
She's had loads of experience in supporting family members who are around a relative dealing with severe mental illness. And so in the episode, we talk quite extensively around how you can best support the family member, but also how you can best look after yourself as well. I've referred to her in the past as the queen of self-care. She was actually the guest for our self-care episode last year.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So I'm really excited to be sharing this episode. She's such a joy, and she will be talking us through all the wonderful support that's out there for families.
I'm so excited. I'm going to share this episode with my mum. Not that she doesn't listen to them already. I don't know. She's like my biggest fan.
Oh, bless. Who's our sponsor? Let's find out.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9, selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Hi, my name is Shanley Lewis. Thank you for having me here again. And my first experience of supporting somebody with a mental health problem was with my dad. So when I was younger, he suffered a stroke, and following that has been experiencing severe depression. So this is something kind of that is still ongoing. And I believe kind of when you are caring for somebody with a mental health problem, it is kind of a lifetime role, a lifetime. Some people call it a job, but I kind of say it's part of my kind of role. And
so how old were you when your dad had the stroke?
I was around 7 years old. So I was pretty young at that time. And at the time, I didn't really know kind of what was going on much. Mm-hmm. I just remember the speech and language therapist coming to the house and kind of providing us with all these kind of post-it notes to stick on all the different things around the house. So we had to kind of basically help him to kind of relearn things again. So we had to kind of put stickers on the fridge, on the table, to kind of identify what they were for him, helping him to kind of remember. So at that time, it was pretty hard. It wasn't really spoken about in the house, so I didn't really kind of know exactly what was happening, but I knew that there was a change in his mood, mm-hmm. or let's say change in the dad that I knew. So there was a big, big shift, big, big change. You know, we really had to kind of come together stronger as a family to really support him and adjust to our new, let's say, new dad.
Mm. And so at that time, how much understanding did you have of what had happened to him?
Just through kind of listening and conversation about the stroke, but not actually having an understanding that the stroke could actually kind of impact his mental health. When I was studying kind of psychology in A-levels and when I was in college, I was really interested in the brain.
And so he was still recovering even at that point?
He had got most of his memory back then, and his speech was much better, but then now he was left with like the mood side of it, so his mood was impacted. So us kind of seeing him dip quite low, and then sometimes mm-hmm. seeing him kind of being back to himself again, but then there was always that dip, which was quite hard when you're a teenager at that time, taking that in as, okay, my dad suffered from a stroke and this has impacted his mood, because it actually happened at the left frontal part of his brain, mm-hmm. and that's kind of where most of the emotions are. That's where kind of our emotions are. That was the part where the hemorrhage had happened.
In terms of the shorter term, then he got a lot of his memory back and you were able to support him with that.
Yes.
But then longer term, he was still having trouble regulating exactly. emotions.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly that.
you studying psychology A-level, mm-hmm. that's giving you more insight into what's going on for him.
Because I think I was quite a curious person anyway, and because it wasn't really spoken about in the household particularly, because I think also in my culture, mental health is not really spoken about at all, really. And obviously there's still that stigma that's there and things.
For the listeners, could you describe your culture?
I'm from the Caribbean, so my parents are from Antigua. And just, I think, in kind of African, Caribbean, or even any other kind of ethnic minority culture, background, people tend not to kind of speak about, and there's lots of research as well that people tend not to speak about, you know, mental health, and it really does make it difficult. And I think most usually the people from kind of those backgrounds who, you know, are less likely to go and seek help and end up in kind of hospital severely unwell because of that sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right that that's really across the board, because that's something I find a lot in my culture from Ireland, that it's a million miles away from the Caribbean, but that sort of fear, it feels like, around mental illness is still there. It's still far too frequently viewed as a weakness, in a way more so than it is with people here.
Yep, that kind of makes it difficult sometimes, especially speaking up about it, and especially in particular my dad, even trying to get him to get the support which he's not accepted. So that is a result, and that's part of the reason, because I think just some of the things that he says, you kind of hear him utter it. So sometimes you're like, do you want to go and talk about this to your GP, where he, it sounds like he feels that there's nobody there to support him, or maybe that he feels that he wouldn't be understood, etc. So that's also part of the reason why I wanted to kind of work in the field as well, just for people to be able to feel that they have people to be able to speak to, even like if it's people who are from a similar background, etc., that, you know, they are able to kind of talk about these things. It's quite hard to see, actually, to be honest.
Yeah, and it can be difficult to communicate as well, because what it isn't is any kind of criticism of the community you're from. And so for better or for worse, often it takes someone from that background to actually break the stigma, because you have that unique insight into concerns your dad may be facing in the context of his background and his environment. Yes. Then in terms of what area you went into, you went into something super relevant to family support.
Yes, I've been working with families actually in different kind of environments as well. So I was working on a mother and baby unit. So a mother and baby unit is usually an inpatient ward. Most of them are quite small, where a mother and the child can stay on the unit to also help with bonding. Sometimes they might kind of be a risk to themselves, but the risk isn't so high and there shouldn't be a risk to baby. They would experience any kind of mental health problem with the support of usually a 24-hour nursing team, and then the rest of the kind of multidisciplinary teams who are kind of all helping the mum and the baby to kind of adjust to this kind of new experience, and also kind of help and aid in recovery until the mum is well enough to obviously be discharged back into the community.
Right, that's a great explanation. Thank you for that.
I was kind of working with fathers of the mothers who were on the ward as well, and helping them to kind of cope with that whole new adjustment of supporting maybe their wife or their partner who has maybe just given birth or does have a child, but also them having that kind of mental health problem as well at the same time. But also, I enjoyed it so much because I know part of, you know, kind of some of the struggles that they, you know, they're experiencing, some of the difficulties. And I think they're also just as important as the patient or the client. I think they're just as important, the family members. And, you know, they live with, or they're supporting the individual majority of the time, compared to any mental health team that they might be with. They are there. And, you know, I think a lot of the time they can be impacted as well. Their emotional well-being or mental health can be impacted as well at the same time. So it's important that, you know, they kind of are able to kind of have that support.
We've previously had a guest on talking all about postnatal depression. And she was one such unit. And it really struck me the kind of jarring difference between her experience and the expectation that she actually had a lot of preemptive dread before giving birth. But even still, the rest of the family were thinking, oh, this is such a wonderful time. And it can be really difficult for them, and they can easily be forgotten about because the way the services are set up, the most focus goes on the person that's struggling, the person that's dealing with the mental illness, which makes sense. But then equally for her husband or her family that were expecting, A, this wonderful, happy time, and B, to be looking after just the baby, not the baby and the mum, that can be quite difficult for them to adjust to.
I completely agree. And yeah, as you said, it's not just kind of only the individual, and yes, they are important, but it's also remembering also the family unit that is around them as well.
And so in that kind of environment, what sort of like tools or techniques would you encourage the family to use?
I would definitely say to kind of take up any support that's around, that are for families, take up any of the help from the nurses, really try and get some education about whatever diagnosis or condition that their loved one has. Because I think a lot of the time it's really helpful to just educate yourself, because although, you know, a lot of the family members may feel that they do know their loved one, and yes, they do, but also they have this condition. So if it's the person had maybe a physical health condition, maybe if it was eczema or something, you would know that, okay, you need to, you know, put this ointment on, or when you're stressed out, this might flare up, etc. So just like with their mental health, it's important that they find out kind of what are the symptoms of their loved one's condition, what are their triggers and things like that, and what are their kind of coping mechanisms, what things do they need to do, what ways can they support them, whether it's medication. So for example, if they're not maybe so keen on medication, is there, you know, a particular person in the family that would be able to kind of support them better in that? Are there times where that person might want to kind of talk about things, etc.? Just kind of working with the individual, but I think education is definitely key. Also, I would say that it's important that they try and make sure that they look after themselves as well, because a lot of the time I remember seeing the maybe partners or family members coming back and forth, and they're tired, they haven't had any sleep because they've been up worrying about their loved one. Not having that sleep will kind of wear you down and then start to affect, you know, your mood as well. I think it's important that they kind of look after themselves and try and practice a lot of self-care during that time. So whether it's relaxation, using kind of any distraction techniques, and really talking about it. So talking about it with kind of the nurses or any, or the rest of, you know, the family, anybody that, you know, they feel safe with. I think it's really important to do so, not to try and take on all of that alone, which you find sometimes they're like, oh, I can't tell maybe somebody, or I don't want to stress others out, etc. But it is important to kind of talk about what you're going through, especially when it's a stressful time, and to not take it all on your own.
And it's understandable the wanting to do that, because you're busy looking after someone else, you're trying to hold everything together. The last thing you want to do is raise additional problems, like, oh, I'm also struggling as well, because you're just trying to hold it all together. But actually, that's why I'm so glad services like that supporting the family exist, because it's preemptive. The last thing we need is a carer then getting ill, whether that's physical or mental. It's just not going to make things any easier. I also loved a point you made about the families having difficulty in recognising how the mental illness manifests. And I think that's one of the most obvious ways that mental health and mental illness can differ in how easy it is to understand. Because if someone's got a physical injury or illness, you can generally see that and sort of categorise that away. Okay, they've slowed up because of this injury, or they need bandages because of this. Whereas with mental illness, because it can affect someone's personality so much, then it's difficult to figure out what's them and what's the illness. And I think that's a big part of why you get, along with stigma, you get this kind of mentality of, oh, why can't you just snap out of it? I just miss the old sister, mother, wife, whoever that family member is.
That's normally they might see their loved one as somebody who's been so strong or who's been able to handle this and all these different things, and all of a sudden they've started to see a different side to them, and they're like, come on, you know, you're strong, you can, you know, you can snap out of it. And that does eventually actually put quite a lot of pressure on the individual who's going through all of that, and it doesn't really help with their recovery as well.
Right. I think that's really important to note, that whilst it's perfectly understandable you may feel that way, mm-hmm. and that they were fine to you when they were acting their usual self,
yeah.
but it's not anything they're doing intentionally. They're dealing with the illness, yeah. or the circumstances, whatever's going on for them. I mean, even with a mother and baby unit, having a child is a massive life shock, yes. anyway, even if you cope with it very well, don't have any mental illness.
Uh-huh. It's still quite a stressful period.
So whilst it's perfectly natural to have these things come up, it's not necessary to say it, because the person that will always want to be back to normal more than you is the person themselves.
Yes.
So they don't need any additional outside pressure. And sometimes that's the simplest thing you can do for somebody, is just sit in it with them, give them the time, listen without judgment. You don't have to have all the answers, but sometimes time is all it takes.
Yes, I completely agree with that. I think a lot of the time, like even when I talk to the people who are going through a difficult time, they're just like, all I want my mum to do is just come and see me. I don't need her to maybe say, you know, criticize me or say any kind of these things. It's just to be here with me during this time. It can be really hard on the family member. It can be a big shock, and it can also be quite hard for them, because, you know, they usually talk about sometimes the, you know, bad experiences, but there are kind of really good experiences as well at the end. So like for myself, even kind of working in this field, obviously there's the good and the bad, but the good is that it's so rewarding at the end. And in a way, as well with the family members, when they do stick through it during those times, even though they're very tough, to stick through it, to look after themselves during that time. Although, you know, sometimes people talk about the stress, and maybe sometimes people say burden, and those words, those negative words, they also say other words, like they've been able to be more resilient. You know, they're more confident in themselves, and it's kind of so rewarding to be able to know that they've been able to get through such a hard time,
yeah.
when sometimes they wouldn't feel that they would have been able to do that before, which is, yeah, which is quite nice. And they're able to then kind of go on to sometimes go into roles where they're able to help others as well. Sometimes they didn't know that they, you know, maybe had that kind of strength in them.
Yeah, no, that's really lovely. And it's something where it is always going to be tough for family members. Mm. And I think particularly the closest family, you have this kind of innate pressure that you want to help and you want to fix things.
Mm.
I think possibly nobody more than like a parent, because there you think, I'm the parent, I should be looking after them. Why can't I make things okay for them? But that's why we have all the services we have, that so often it does take outside professionals. You don't have to fix everything on your own, and that's a benefit. It's not a flaw.
Yeah,
it's really nice to hear about those good times too, when people have learned that they maybe had a skill set they never thought they had, and with your support they've been able to hone that.
Yeah,
and so hopefully you're not only letting a patient out of the mental health ward, but you're also putting them into a family that's better able to support them. So hopefully if something comes up again, it may not get to the point of them needing to go into that kind of care in the first place.
Yeah. When families are provided with kind of psychoeducation, so information about the individual's condition, their relapse rates are less.
That's your experience then working in a mother and baby unit. And if you're listening and you want to learn more about that experience from the other side, we had an interview with Amy Steele on postnatal depression that you can find from last year. And so now you're working again with families, but in a different role.
Yes. So I'm working mainly with family and carers who have a loved one who experiences first episode of psychosis. So that's in early intervention team, and mainly provide kind of one-to-one sessions where I'll talk and educate the family member or carer on the individual's mental health condition. And again, that's what I was kind of talking about, where there's a lot of research that supports that if people are more informed, their recovery rates are better, and they're more equipped and are aware of kind of their early warning signs and things. And if they aren't able to support the individual at home, they're able to kind of contact services earlier. So they kind of fit within that whole early intervention model, let's say.
Yeah, that's really important. And I think particularly for psychosis, it's so vital because when people are going through that, they don't necessarily, in the middle of psychosis, have much insight anyway. But then if it's also their first or second experience of that, then they're still figuring out how it affects them, how it changes their personality. And so it's a lot for the person and the family members to adjust to, but just the simple steps of the family member getting a better idea of triggers and warning signs can mean they're so much better equipped to contact extra support on that person's behalf.
And also part of the one-to-one sessions is that we provide information in terms of their own emotional well-being as well. So supporting them on that side of things, because we also notice that some of the carers and family members also have some mild or moderate symptoms of depression or anxiety and have sometimes difficulties with sleep and things like that. So we support them on that side as well. Sometimes we also have a group as well, so a support group where other family members or carers are able to come and sit and share their experiences. Sometimes they feel like they're the only one going through this. It can feel like that sometimes, but then when they come to these groups, they realise that they're having a similar experiences.
That could be so vital because particularly I think if you're a carer where it's you and the other person. So it's maybe it's your partner. When it's just you and them, I imagine it can be really difficult to have context.
Yes.
And so their bad week can easily turn into your bad week. But actually, if you go to a support group like that, you'll hear a lot of the things you're going through echoed. That's not just me. It's a really important context.
Yes, I completely agree. I think it's a nice place, especially because I think people might actually not classify themselves as a carer, because a lot of the time they would just say, well, I'm such and such mum, I'm their mum, I'm not their carer. But so that word kind of might not resonate with a lot of people. I know that, you know, maybe in the context of maybe the NHS or healthcare system, they will be identified as a carer. So, you know, the role itself, as I was saying, can be, you know, really demanding. And sometimes, you know, you can just feel like you're focusing on looking after your loved one. And you can sometimes then isolate yourself a lot, which does kind of no good also for your own mental well-being.
And do you find the kind of carers you deal with, they can have trouble making friends and remaining social while they're having that experience?
That's definitely something that's very common, because I think a lot of the time they feel like they don't want to kind of burden others, or they're going through this stressful time, they want to kind of deal with it alone or keep it within the family units. Those are kind of common things that you hear. But, you know, you start to see, once you have these conversations and identify certain things with them, like not isolating themselves and actually maybe trying to share what they're going through with somebody, a trusted friend or etc., and asking for help and not taking it all on themselves, and actually maybe kind of asking other family members, maybe not the people that they live with, but other family members, like, okay, could you come round so that maybe you could go to this show or go out for a meal as well, to kind of do some stuff for yourselves, because a lot of the time people do talk about sometimes how they feel like this is kind of the only thing that they're doing, but we encourage that they have goals, they have things, they have, you know, they still create a life for themselves as well.
Yeah, And that's what the person you're caring for probably wants for you as well. They still want you to be living your life, and that person doesn't want to feel like a burden either. And so sometimes it's these small things like still having your own separate time without them, still meeting up with friends, still setting goals like you described, that help the person being cared for feel that they're not holding you back. The reason I asked about whether you find they have difficulty making friends is because I'm aware of that experience where people want to keep everything in, they want to keep things in the family. And it makes sense. It may just be a way of controlling things. So when the person they're caring for is having health ups and downs, it's a way for them to sort of keep the parameters on their life together. But there'll also be plenty of people in your life that may not understand the caring you're doing.
So that also comes into you kind of opening up and sharing it with maybe people that you do trust, but also trying to be flexible as well with and creative with your situation, because obviously maybe you might be used to, or friends might be used to, coming round, and maybe that might not be appropriate anymore. And so maybe you'd have to start to get flexible or creative with how you meet up with friends. So it might be that you might have to go around instead, and you could, you know, bring your loved one along. But it might be that maybe friends can't come round, but it doesn't mean that you still can't do these things, whatever it may be.
It's about keeping those relationships alive. And it's, like I mentioned earlier, I think it's really important kind of context that whatever's happening with that person, sometimes you just need to be around that one friend that's having a great week, and it just helps balance it out, so you don't feel everything's doom and gloom, which, when you're feeling isolated, particularly when you're at home a lot caring for someone, you can sort of get involved in almost the weather of the household.
Kind of in terms of that context, there are lots of different kind of other emotions, or people feeling guilty to kind of do these things, like go to friends or do things that they enjoy, and there is that guilt. But as you know, you were saying, it is important to do these things so that their loved one is able to notice that they are having also a life as well, outside of kind of what they do day to day. And you know, they also kind of talk about kind of other emotions, like kind of anger and feeling quite angry. Those are quite common, you know, all these emotions are very common, and it's a really difficult thing to you know, live with sometimes for some people. It's important to understand that these emotions are common,
right? Because that can be so tough if you're having trouble adjusting to being a carer, or maybe you've been a carer a long time and you're finding that the routine of it and the strain of it stressful. It can be frustrating. Sometimes the person isn't getting better, or sometimes they keep having ups and downs, and it can feel relentless. And so it's great that there's services like what you do. It's great that there's support groups that they can go to. And you can be around other people who, if you say, look, they're really having a tough week, the person I'm caring for, maybe they're taking it out on you, they're being a bit irritable, and it's making you frustrated. You can go to a safe space where you can voice those feelings, because sometimes you might think, oh, but if I tell somebody, they'll judge me for feeling frustrated. I shouldn't be frustrated about a family member.
It's a common thing, as I was saying, and these are normal reactions and normal emotions.
And I think we've mentioned it before, but I think the final thing I'd want to mention on that is the importance of you getting support as well. It's not a comparison. The person you may be caring for may be a lot worse than you, but that doesn't mean you're not entitled to support too. It doesn't mean you're not allowed to feel stressed and frustrated. And sometimes, actually, the best thing for them is that you look after yourself too. Whatever way that is, and that includes if you need support for your mental health, go get it. You're just as worthy of the support, and actually you looking after you makes you best place to look after them. So we'll wrap up in a minute then, we're nearly out of time, but I'm keen to circle back to what we talked about originally with your family and supporting your dad. So having roles like this and having done all the study that you've done for it, How has that changed how you're able to support him?
In one way, it's that, you know, to understand, you know, that there's a lot of support out there, because I think prior, when I was younger, I'm not too sure what it was like in those days,
right.
But there may have not been as much support, and there was much more focus on the patient, let's say, so for okay. my dad. But then working in this field, I've had to kind of take that role to be the kind of educator, and kind of breaking things down to help them to understand maybe that when he's maybe doing this thing, this is because of this, kind of just explaining things to help, because I have a younger sister as well, and for her, sometimes processing kind of some of his emotions is really difficult. So I find that when I'm explaining, saying this is actually a symptom, when he is not motivated to kind of get up, or not motivated to maybe even talk or say hi, this is, you know, a sign that he's probably quite low at the moment, and things like that. So just educating them on the symptoms and the behaviour, and helping them to kind of make sense of it, in terms of what it looks like for him.
Right.
And then us just, you know, doing our best to stick together as a family and talking about it. I think that's really important, because sometimes, because it is, you know, something that's ongoing, something that we live with, perhaps maybe people feel maybe not as comfortable to talk about it again, but I just encourage, like, we have a nice little sit down and we just talk about it, we just hash it out, get it out, cry, scream, whatever has to be done, and then we, you know, move on, and that helps us to be able to kind of bounce back. I love my dad, and we encourage him, we, you know, pull on his strengths, because he's really good at, you know, cooking, really, really exceptional. He doesn't like to own it, and just getting him to do those things. So sometimes if there's a day that he's struggling with kind of cooking, or just doing things in general, we come together as a family and just try and make it fun, or put on the music that he likes. If he's not doing it, then we'll do it. You just put on his reggae or whatever that he likes to listen to, and just kind of lifts him up. And then, you know, you start to notice that kind of mood. When it is really down, we go for walks, just like, maybe let's go out. If maybe my mum or anybody's feeling quite frustrated, we're like, hey, let's just go for a walk, talk about it. Mm-hmm. And being aware, okay, when somebody else is maybe not doing so well, supporting them, as, and then just explaining things. So I've been the explainer mm-hmm. a little bit, but I don't mind. I enjoy it. Yeah.
That's so great. Mm-hmm. It's great to hear how supporting your dad, and in turn supporting each mm-hmm. other, has really brought the family together.
Yeah, it has.
I think it's very easy to fall into this trap of thinking about mm-hmm. what a ideal family is,
mm-hmm.
and actually the ideal or the normal family doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Families are never linear.
Yeah.
It's just as important that you all support each other as it yeah. is you support the youngest mm-hmm. in the family, or the one that's your child. Mm-hmm. It's actually about coming together and saying, okay, where are the needs?
Yeah, what can we do? I think, yeah, I agree. Yeah, and it's I think you all need each other, and I really like to always say that everybody in this kind of world, we all need each other. So I think it is important that the family does try their best to come together to kind of help their loved one, really, if possible.
For sure. All right, so we will wrap up there then. If you've enjoyed listening to this episode, you can catch another episode with Shanley we did last year. That's our self-care episode. Also, if you want to take a look at a new and exciting self-care option that Shanley runs, that's Good to Me. And they are care boxes that you can order. I previously called them like Grey's boxes for self-care. I've been lucky to be given one of these self-care boxes, and they're really cool. And so you can find out more about that at goodtomeuk.com, and the link for that is also in the description. So thank you again for joining us.
I really enjoyed my time, so thank you for
yeah.
having me here again.
Great, and we might go back to the drawing board and think about, oh, what's your 2020 episode going to be? Thank you again.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating.
Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.